Welcome to a special edition of the Computer Weekly Downtime Upload podcast. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Cliff Sarin, and I'm joined today by Gartner analyst Bill Ray, who, and I think it's safe to say, has some interesting views on 5G networks. Bill is the lead author of some maverick research looking at 5G. So to get the ball rolling, Bill, would you mind giving me a little introduction about yourself and help us all with a definition for maverick research? I mean, it sounds a bit Top Gun, doesn't it?
Well, it's a chance to look at things from a slightly different angle. And thank you very much for inviting me. It's very good to be here. The maverick research is an area of research which doesn't necessarily agree with the mainstream view, and indeed the mainstream Gartner view. Gartner, like all organizations, we have a lot of analysts who have a lot of very strong viewpoints, and we don't always agree. I know that we present a single view to the rest of the world, but in fact, within Gartner, discussion and argument is very much part of our business. In fact, that's how the company was formed, by people arguing with each other. And we don't always agree. And sometimes a point of view will emerge, which is strong, perhaps not strong enough to take over, but strong. And therefore, we publish a maverick research note. And this research note lays out that opinion, explains the logic behind it, and it enables our customers to look at it and say, actually, I agree with those points. And therefore, I think this maverick is more likely than the mainstream approach.
So you've been looking at, one of the things is 5G. And I think you have some interesting viewpoints. From what I've read anyway about 5G and the alternatives to that. Well, let's start with the positives. I mean, what are the main use cases for 5G?
Well, this is the big problem. 5G is a technology looking for a problem to solve. It was designed by mobile network operators that wanted a reason to expand their operations and to increase their revenue. It wasn't designed to solve a specific problem. Nobody sat down and went, 4G isn't good enough, therefore we'll make 5G. These things happen every 10 years. It's a cycle. We'll have 6G in 2030. We still don't know what it's for, but we will have it in 2030. So start with that premise that 5G is a solution looking for a problem. And then we look at the problem that it solves. Well, it provides extremely high bandwidth, massive amounts of data, far more data than you can consume on a mobile phone. And I think that's the overriding issue with 5G, is that if you think of a mobile phone, that rectangle of glass and plastic that we carry with us, 5G is not better than 4G. It does not change the experience. It doesn't make it better. It doesn't improve the internet access.
Yeah, that's very true. Sorry, Bill, but that's really true, actually, isn't it? I mean, I have a 5G phone, mobile phone, and yeah, I mean, you come into London, you get, I don't get the 5G where I live here, but you get the 5G when you go into London, you get the 5G in some places. I can't say I've noticed the difference. And I guess unless you're, I mean, a hardcore gamer or you're streaming all the time, there isn't really going to be that much of a benefit. And I guess the other thing is that if everyone used it, we'll all run out of bandwidth.
Even if you're streaming all the time, there's a limit to how much you can stream. Once you get beyond about 70 or 80 megabits per second, there's nothing more you can do. Yes, you can technically download a gigabit per second to a mobile phone, but you can't consume that much data. In fact, you can barely put it in memory at that speed. So you've got all this data rushing in, but you've got nothing to do with it. Now, I'm not saying that 5G doesn't have value. It does. There are applications that do need that kind of bandwidth. But the smartphone, as we understand it, cannot consume that much bandwidth. So 5G doesn't improve the user experience.
So what are the main problems you see with 5G? And I know you've touched on that already, but is there one thing that comes to the front and foremost for you?
5G is a range of technologies. It provides more bandwidth, which is fine. That's nice. But it also provides something called ultra-reliable low-latency communications. And that's a mechanism whereby, rather than being connected to a base station, your mobile phone or your car or your drone connects to three or four base stations simultaneously. And that way, if a base station disappears or the connection gets broken, it doesn't get broken. It just slows down. Mm. And that way, you can have completely reliable connections. And that's brilliant. The problem is that doesn't exist yet. That's in the technical specification for 5G, but nobody's deployed it yet. It's coming. The problem with 5G is that it isn't here yet. We've got the headline stuff. We've got the very fast bandwidth. But frankly, that's the least interesting part of 5G. We are years away from having that ultra-low latency, reliable connectivity, which is what we were promised and what will actually change things.
Mm. So the research that you've produced, that Gartner's produced, has looked at low Earth orbit satellites, LEO. I think I've read some of the papers and there were a huge number of acronyms that I wasn't really familiar with. Just to start with, I guess it says what it is on the box kind of thing, but what is a low Earth orbit satellite? Why is it important? Why should we be paying attention to it?
So traditional satellites orbit at a range of about 36,000 kilometres. And they orbit above the equator. This is the normal sort of television broadcast satellite. Mm-hmm. And the great thing about that is they orbit at the same speed as the Earth rotates, which means they're always at the same point in the sky, so you can point a dish at them, and that's great. But they are 36,000 kilometres away. Low Earth orbit can be as low as 500 kilometres away. So that's a massive difference in distance. These satellites are only just out of reach. You know, they're right at the edge of the atmosphere. Mm. And what that means is the first thing is you don't need nearly so much power to reach them. You can have a lower power transmitter. Secondly, there's no latency. You don't have to, the signal's only traveling 500 kilometers. So you don't get this normal satellite latency that you do on satellite phones and things like that. The third thing is that they cover a very small area. So you have a satellite and it can only serve a certain number of customers, which means it can provide more bandwidth. The problem is that you need a lot of satellites. Mm. From geostationary orbit, 36,000, you can cover a third of the Earth with one satellite. This is what Arthur C. Clarke said when he first wrote about these back in the 50s. He said three satellites, you can cover the whole Earth. Mm. To cover it from low Earth orbit, you need hundreds of satellites, possibly thousands of satellites. And that has been impossible. Now, this was tried back in the 1990s. We had a couple of companies that tried it. They went bankrupt. Iridium was the only survivor. But things have changed. Satellites have got much, much cheaper. Launch costs have got much, much cheaper. So suddenly it's starting to make sense to have these satellites in low Earth orbit.
I'm not familiar with space technology at all, but 500 kilometres, is it possible to launch it, from a suitable aircraft?
Nearly. You have to use a rocket. So there is Virgin Space actually have a 747, which has like a missile under the wing. Mm. The 747 goes up to altitude and then the missile does the last bit just into orbit. But no, generally you're using rockets and you're launching, but you're launching 50 of these satellites at a time at the moment. SpaceX launches 50 at a time. They will be launching several hundred once they get Starship flying. So it's not very far away. It's just at the edge of the atmosphere.
We're going a bit off topic, but that does raise an interesting question around space junk.
So in fact, there's the space junk. Yes, don't get me wrong, it's an issue. Yes, space junk is definitely a problem, but it's not an insurmountable one. These things do burn up relatively quickly. They don't sit there for decades or indeed centuries.
Okay. Why should we be paying attention to low Earth orbit satellites specifically? What's the use case?
There's a couple of use cases. The first thing is internet access. So Starlink is already offering home internet access to 500,000 people. Anywhere in the world, you can get yourself a Starlink dish. You can put it outside and you can get internet access between 1 and 200 megabits per second for $110 a month. And that's already happening. That's already changing people's lives today. Mm. The next thing is mobile backhaul. So if you want to put up a base station, a cellular base station, you can now backhaul it via satellite. And KDDI in Japan is deploying 1,200 base stations with satellite backhaul, where they just have a dish. And then all you need is power. So you can have solar power or diesel generator, and that's all you need. And suddenly you've got a mobile phone base station, and you can put that anywhere. So it becomes much cheaper to roll out mobile phone infrastructure. Mm. And when I say anywhere, I'm not just talking about, sub-Saharan Africa and India. I'm talking about the middle of Texas or indeed in Scotland, yes, where building base stations requires fiber optic cables and all sorts of equipment, which doesn't come out. But you can just do this anywhere very cheaply. So that makes it much more cost effective. So that even if nothing else happens with satellite, it's going to make it much cheaper to roll out mobile phone coverage.
How big are the dishes that would have to be on the base station?
Oh, about 60 centimetres.
Tiny.
It's only going 500 kilometers. In fact, you can go one stage further because a mobile phone can send a signal about 500 kilometers. That's a mobile phone like the one you've already got on your desk. So with the right satellite, you could connect directly to that satellite with your existing mobile phone without having any mobile infrastructure. Now, there are two companies planning to do that. One is called Link and one is called Space Mobile. Link is doing 2G connectivity, and they switched on their test satellite recently across Europe, and they successfully connected to 6,000 endpoints. So 6,000 mobile phones that thought they were connecting to a base station, but in fact were connecting to a satellite. They did not know the difference.
Does it need line of sight?
No, the frequencies they're using are quite low, so they don't. They do require frequencies to use, and they have to make a deal with a local operator. So you'll have to use a frequency. What will happen is that you'll be with Vodafone or whoever, and you'll come out of coverage, and a little dialogue will pop up saying, would you like to switch to Space Mobile? For which they'll charge you about $3 a day. And you say yes, and now you're going via satellite. Now, it's not going to work at the bottom of the floor of a tower block. Hmm. But if you're in a normal house, yes, you should be able to get, they say you'll be able to get a signal. The Space Mobile are planning to offer 4G over this. And they should be able to get 80 megabits per second to a mobile phone anywhere in the world. That's a $50 4G handset, like the one that's already in your hand, directly via satellite. Now, I have to say their satellite is a bit of a leap of faith. It's currently sitting in Florida on the launch pad, Cape Canaveral on the launch pad, or at least very near the launch pad. It's launching maybe next week, week after, the first test satellite. And if that works, then they're going to raise money and launch a whole constellation.
So we're looking at towards the end of August, something will be up there, and then maybe the end of the year we'll start seeing something?
Not quite, because of the way these satellites work, because they're moving all the time. It takes about 5 minutes to go from horizon to horizon. So one satellite is brilliant for testing, but until you get all your constellation launched, you can't provide coverage to anyone, if you see what I mean. Oh, right. Because you won't have geographic coverage, you'll have temporal coverage. You might have coverage for an hour and then no coverage for 2 hours and then coverage for an hour until you get all your satellites deployed. So it's really, it's an all or nothing situation. 188, I believe, is in their plan. So they're talking end of 2023. I have to say that is optimistic. But if it works, yeah, it could be 2025, something like that.
I mean, in some of the research that I've read, the cost of actually launching these things is significantly less anyway. So does that mean they wouldn't have to raise as much today to do this kind of thing?
That's right. The only issue is that these particular satellites used by Space Mobile are huge. I mean, they are enormous. You know, 9 square meters, really very, very big. They've got to fold out in space. That's the really difficult thing. They're folded up into a little box and they've got to fold out. So there's a lot of technical challenges they'll have to face. But in general, satellites have got much cheaper. And ironically, the reason they've got cheaper is because of mobile phones. We've spent the last 20 years making antennas, making radio frequency, making processors, batteries, all this stuff that goes into a smartphone is perfect for satellites. So this technology that we have miniaturized and made lightweight and robust and waterproof and all of these things we've done with these technologies, it all makes them more usable in satellites. And that's one of the reasons satellites are getting so cheap now.
I mean, I presume there's solar powered even, but they must have batteries. I mean, did the batteries last 5 years? Because the ones on the mobile phones don't.
Yes, they do have batteries. They generally, because they get solar power, but not at night. Obviously, they have to pass over the night side of the Earth, and there's no solar power there. So in those cases, yes, they have batteries, and they will last 5 years, yes. There's a question as to the economic viability. If you look at Starlink, and you look at their plans, they're planning to deploy more than 30,000 satellites. Now, 30,000 satellites with a lifespan of 5 years, that means just to maintain the network, you're replacing 500 satellites a month. Now, if you're launching 50 at a time, as you are with the Falcon 9, their current launch vehicle, that means you're launching satellites every 3 days just to maintain. That's not to build the network, that's just to maintain it. And that's not doable. Now, there's two things. Firstly, we think they're going to downscale on the size of the satellites. The size of each satellite is increasing, so there may be fewer satellites. We don't think they'll launch 30,000. The other thing is Starship, which is the new SpaceX launch vehicle, which is much more efficient and much larger. Now, assuming that works, and that is currently sitting on the launch pad, assuming it works and is reusable, that will bring down the cost of launch massively. So that will make them much more viable. But if Starship doesn't work, then that's and you know, New Glenn, there's various other alternatives, but if they don't work, then the cost of launch will be prohibitive and it will be hard to be sustainable. You need to build up a big customer base to pay off these things.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's also the fact that, I mean, launching a rocket every 3 days is not very environmentally friendly either, really.
No, it's not. It's not doable. The weather alone would stop you. But we're tracking, at Gartner, we're tracking about 30 companies who say they're going to launch low Earth orbit communication satellites, broadband. And there's no way there's a market. We've got the same problem as we have with 5G. If all of them launch, there'll be way too much bandwidth and no one to pay for it. So those companies, most of those companies will go bankrupt. Most of them won't make it. So we've still got a lot of tough times as these companies go up, launch their satellites. Some of them go bankrupt, some of them don't. And we see where the market shakes out to.
I mean, there does seem to be a missing link. Some sci-fi needs to be invented, you know, like a space station that can manufacture this stuff so you don't have to actually launch it.
Yeah, they talk of doing that on the moon, certainly, but that's a very long way away, and most of lunar exploration is still government funded. But in low Earth orbit, there's a lot going on. And if the launch costs can come down, you know, Elon Musk does say he's planning to be able to launch for $10 a kilogram. That's what he's aiming for with Starship. Now, $10 a kilogram is very optimistic. But if they achieve $200-$300 a kilogram, that still changes how we approach orbit and the ability to put things into orbit.
So how much do these things weigh?
Starlink, the existing satellites are about 260 kilograms. The new ones are, the ones that they haven't started launching yet, are significantly heavier. They're a bit bigger. And Amazon, of course, have their Kuiper network, which they're starting to build, which will be a competitive network. Those will be significantly bigger. So 500-600 kilograms.
So, I mean, it looks like, you know, you've got Amazon, you've got SpaceX, so you've got some of the biggest companies on the planet kind of doing this stuff, right? And then at the other end of the scale, you've got startups. I mean, is it just purely going to be something out of economics? You know, the biggest, you know, the ones with the biggest share are going to have the resources to do this.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. That'll be the case. And it will be the Starlinks and the Amazons. The European project, they're putting in 6 billion euros into their own constellation. The Chinese have one called SatNet, which is a private company, but it's got a lot of government involvement. That'll help them. OneWeb, of course, has the UK government invested and has just been bought by Eutelsat. Will they? It's going to be tough. And then we've got others, like, you know, we've got a whole lot of companies, some of which have access to radio spectrum, some of which have access to particular capabilities, but it's going to be very tough for them to compete.
What happens if, you know, one of these low Earth orbit satellites encounters a bit of debris? Hopefully it doesn't encounter it, because that will ruin it. But, you know, what happens if it's there and something has to be done?
Well, the first thing to be aware of is that space is really big. So, yes, there's a lot of debris, but there's a lot of space. So it's quite rare. However, yes, it happens. And in those cases, they have to move out of the way. Now, most satellites these days have some sort of thruster motor. Normally a Xeon drive or something like that. Now, these are highly efficient. Sometimes they literally have just a gas cylinder, a compressurized gas cylinder that can shoot out gas. But that's a small amount of fuel, and they can use that to maneuver. And in fact, it's also used when they launch. So when you launch satellites these days, you launch them into the wrong orbit because it's cheap, and then you shift them to the right orbit using their onboard motors. But when you run out of fuel, then you're done. So the lifetime of the satellite is often dictated by the amount of fuel it's carrying. And of course, you want to keep your last bit of fuel in order to deorbit. Ideally, your very last bit of fuel is used to push the satellite back towards the Earth so it burns up in the atmosphere.
Let's go back to the beginning, actually. I mean, when we started off with 5G, we were talking about, you know, your mobile phone in your pocket probably has more bandwidth than you'll ever need. I mean, you can't consume that amount of bandwidth. And if you went on to 5G, well, how many movies can you physically stream simultaneously? And would you really be able to do that? I mean, I think this goes back to the challenges. I mean, the mobile phone companies, operators want to sell consumers and businesses something better. But what we have is, if what we have is good enough,
the key
where
thing,
do they
and I think
next?
This is where the satellite. The key thing, and I think this is where the satellite comes in, is the consistency of connectivity. Our research at Gartner says that almost all business applications are happy with 5 megabits per second. About 5 to 6 megabits per second is what you need to work from home. That's what you need to do your business applications, 5 to 6 megabits per second. the video link we're on now is far less than that. The problem is that we buy 100 megabits per second or a gigabit per second from our internet service provider, but they don't deliver it. They deliver little bursts of data. And the same thing with our mobile phones. You know, you've got a connection. Yeah, you can deliver a gigabit per second or hundreds of megabits per second, but it's far more useful to have a reliable 10 megabits per second than it is to have an unattainable or occasionally attainable high speed. So what we should expect to see is mobile operators actually not offering 100 megabits per second, offering a minimum speed. Don't tell me my maximum. Don't offer me a gigabit per second. Tell me I will always get at least 6 megabits per second, and that I will pay for, because that will provide a better experience. And satellite is part of that, because it will provide those infill base stations. And of course, if I happen to be taking a train across Africa, I'll be able to get a connection there, and it will still be a minimum of 6 megabits per second. And that's far more valuable to me than some headline speed that I'll never achieve anyway.
That's very true. Okay then. Well, Bill, thank you ever so much. It's been fantastic talking to you. There's going to be a lot to think about, actually. And I know you mentioned Arthur C. Clarke, and we were actually touching on some very sort of sci-fi type stuff. I mean, do you think that it's some of this stuff is still science fiction?
Well, Arthur C. Clarke was the one who predicted that these orbits existed, that the geostationary orbit was a thing. And he wrote about these three satellites that provided communication across the entirety of the Earth. What's interesting, of course, in his world, those satellites were manned. They each had a crew, I think, of five or six people. And he wrote books about, or he wrote a particular short story about the life of those people on that satellite. But it didn't occur to him that it could be completely automated. So on the one hand, he predicted the mathematics, he predicted all of that, but he didn't predict the automation. So yes, I think there are elements of what we're doing is sort of science fiction-y and definitely pushing the boundaries. We talk about manufacturing in space and flexible configurations and things like that. But we need to do that because the opportunities are so vast. Global communication, the ability to know you can communicate everywhere, is going to have a profound impact on humanity. We are going to see, you know, at the moment, only 50% of people have access to broadband internet in the world. We're going to see the rest of the world coming online, and that's going to change things. We're going to see a cultural shift in the internet as we bring these people online and they're able to gain from it. For better or worse, you know, it's good and bad, but the information flow, the ability to negotiate crop prices, the ability to find out what the weather is going to be, these are really valuable insights. You don't need to deliver a whole lot of information to change someone's life in many of these economies. I've traveled through a lot of Africa, and the initiative, the desire to change the world is so strong in a lot of these countries, and the ability to do that. And this connectivity is going to provide that. It's a very, very exciting time, and it's really exciting to be able to see how the internet and communication is going to change the world over the next 10 years.
Exactly. Well, Bill, thank you ever so much. It's been lovely to talking to you today. And thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.